Rebecca, and to all of our listeners all over the world, you're listening to a much belated episode of Let's Weekend. I am your host with the most, Brandon Perkins. Joining me as always, Filippo D'Onofrio, Patrick Mifflin, and Chris Sologi. Say hi, guys.
Hello.
Yeah, so we took a break last week because, you know, events kind of coalesced that prevented us from basically doing anything. Of course, Phil's was moving. He had to, you know, needed some time to get his new internet connection set up. And I was out of town for a wedding. And so if you follow me on Facebook, you know my attitude towards weddings. And I'm going to get into that a little bit more detail in a little bit. But suffice it to say, I fucking hate them with the fury of a million suns. And just every way possible that I can possibly, it's like all the things that my senses hate are all epitomized in a fucking wedding. Hmm. But I'll be getting, of course, to that later. So this episode is going to be for July 6, 2018. We're after the 4th of July. I don't know about you, but 4th of July was kind of muted this year.
No, not in my neighborhood.
I mean, we still had plenty of fireworks, but
yeah, I wasn't feeling too patriotic.
No, not many. I don't think a lot of people were.
It was also the middle of the week too.
Yeah, there's that too. I mean, I will say if July 4th was like on a Friday or Saturday, yeah, it may have been different. But it was fucking Wednesday. People had to fucking get to work.
Yep.
So. So on tonight's show, just amongst other things, we're going to be having our usual asshole of the week. It's not Trump, believe it or not, or anybody in his administration. We got a notorious French gangster who basically made a movie style escape that is just fucking, we got a House representative who was being accused of turning a blind eye to sexual abuse, and he is apparently not taking it well, because, and you'll see what we mean later on. We now know that there's an upcoming Sonic the Hedgehog movie, and we know who's supposed to be playing Dr. Eggman. You will be surprised who, because I kind of didn't see it coming. Oh, yeah, and we got some Netflix stuff, too. You know that psychic octopus in Japan that was supposed to predict what the World Cup results was supposed to be?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's dead. You'll find out why later. Yeah. The EPA chief, Scott Pruitt. Yeah, you'll be asking yourself, is Scott Pruitt still chief of it? Chief of the EPA? You'll find out later in the show. Quick answer, no. No, he's not.
Yeah.
Of course, the guy who's going to be replacing him isn't much better, but we'll be getting that to later. So, all of that and more on this edition of Let's Weekend. So, to start us off, Phil, what have you been up to these last 2 weeks?
So, as you mentioned, I was moving. Last Friday I was basically, there were more boxes than furniture, so yeah, that kind of prevented me from doing anything really good there. It was also 105.
Huh. So, oh yeah, this is Canada, so
that's
not
a
something
that usually,
happens very often.
Yeah. It's like, does not compute. So, even if we had done a show then, I probably wouldn't have been very mentally capable of doing it, because I would have been a puddle. So, yeah.
I want to say that I saw that there were a lot of people up in Quebec that had died due to the heat wave.
I wouldn't surprise me. Either.
It was like 17 people.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm thinking, just suck that fucking blue.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah, I had a couple of friends who do outdoor work during that time, and it's like, oh, God.
At least some of them were able to call in sick that day.
Well, some of them took half days, and some of them just toughed it out with a whole lot of water. So,
yeah,
worked out, but still, it was no fun.
Well, now you know what it feels like to live down here.
Yeah, it's like this happens regularly over there?
Oh, yeah. Yep. In fact, it got up to around 97 just late last week, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've been hanging out around 100 here all week.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so.
We're used to this shit. You guys aren't.
Hey, 40 below winters? Yeah, we're totally okay with that. But, yeah, to 105 degree heat, yeah, not really used to that. So.
Hot enough to cook a piece of chicken on pavement? No, probably. Canada's not really used to that kind of thing.
Nope. So that was fun. So I picked up a couple of audiobooks to, like, tide me over while I was, you know, doing that. Because basically, in that kind of heat, you really don't want to be moving a whole hell of a lot. So
no.
That's pretty much what I did. Just, you know, laid back and listened to Age of Myth. Not Age of Myth, Age of War. Age of Myth was the second book. Age of War is the third book of the Legends of the First Empire, the series, mm-hmm. from Michael J. Sullivan. Turning out pretty damn good so far. Two more books left in that series, and I can't wait until he finishes them. So, yeah, a very good high fantasy type series that is actually takes on some issues that a lot of fantasy novels just completely ignore. So, yeah, check that out. Also picked up The Singularity Trap by Dennis E. Taylor. I haven't started that one yet, but I intend to. After listening to the Bobaverse, it's like, yeah, I'm going to basically listen to anything that he puts out. So looking forward to diving into that once I'm done with Age of War. So I got my books covered for the month, pretty much. Other than that, well, unpacking. Yeah, I got a few boxes here and there that I could see. There's some in the hallway. But for the most part, it's starting to look like an apartment again. So that's always a good sign. Yeah, and trying to figure out, like, it's like I'm at the point now where I'm starting to realize that there's some stuff here that I probably am missing. Wonder where it went. So I don't know if it's in a box in the storage closet over in the living room, or if it's one of these other boxes that I haven't unpacked yet, or if it just stayed where in the other place. So I don't know. So yeah, hopefully it's nothing too major, but we'll see. I still have to get through everything. So apart from that, well, in the evenings I've been playing Shining Force 2. And boy, that game is an improvement over the first one.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, this game takes it to a completely different level. The first one was kind of like a good, you know, proof of concept of the style. And then this one here is, well, it's more like a traditional RPG where you got some exploration and stuff. And, you know, you got secret quests. You've got subclasses that you can only get promoted to if you have a specific item. And some of them are pretty badass. So there's that, you know, and there's a lot more going on in that game than I initially thought. I'm actually making a concerted effort now to level up Slade. He's the rat that basically causes that whole thing. yeah, because he basically turns into like a ninja if you manage to promote him, and then he gets some pretty badass magic. Yeah. So yeah, you kind of really want to, you know, put some effort into him. So I've basically been setting up kills for him as best I can. With the way that you level up in this game, it's actually a lot faster than it was in the first one. So,
yeah.
But the you know, the levels kind of scale to that as well. So like it used to be like in the first one you'd promote at level 10. This one here I think it's 20. So yeah, I haven't had anybody promoted yet, but you know, I'll still work through that. And once I get through that game, well, I got Shining Force 3 to look forward to, which is a game I've never played ever. So I'll be, you know, going into it fresh. Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing what I missed.
A hell of a last hurrah for Camelot before they went off to be part of Nintendo.
Yeah, so, yeah, I got the Saturn emulator set up, and it's all ready to go. And as soon as I finish Shining Force 2, I'm jumping right in. So that's been it for me. What about you, Pat?
Well, with the combination of still having to unpack a lot of shit and the severe heat, I've been in a particular state of burnout myself. So I've not been so productive on the unpacking side of things, but all I've really been able to do is just get the air moving in here, sit down, and finally watch some anime for a change. And this time I finally got around to checking out My Hero Academia.
Uh-huh.
And I have always said that Naruto would have been a much better series without Naruto in it. This is that series. And I'm about 30 episodes in, and I'm just loving every minute of it. I like the measured pace that they're going with the seasons. I know not a lot of people are happy about that. But if they're going to avoid filler arcs, then I think that's going to be a real positive for the production.
Well, that's partly because of the fact that the actual manga is, unlike pretty much every other, you know, manga that runs in Shonen Jump, My Hero Academia doesn't really do, like, the big stretched out story arcs. They tend, you know, like, they do have, like, a... They like you're 30 episodes in now, so you know they do have a tournament arc. In the manga, the tournament arc only lasts like a volume, and then it's over.
Yeah, that kind of surprised me. Like I just figured the rubber band hadn't been pulled far enough back yet.
No, that's it, because you know the creator really fucking hates that kind of thing.
Oh, okay.
So
interesting.
And have you noticed also that as you've watched the series, they kind of play around with a lot of shonen tropes in general?
Yeah.
Like they kind of just like for one thing, the hero is, let's be honest, he's kind of a crying bitch.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just, in general, it's a great show. I love how it plays around with the superhero genre. This is an anime that would not have existed if it wasn't for, you know, the Marvel Cinematic Universe being so popular in Japan. but yeah, it's awesome. So,
yeah, I'm enjoying it.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I'm kind of surprised to hear you say that about the long story arc, though, because I could feel it coming on.
Uh-huh.
By the time we got to the end of the tournament arc, I was starting to think, okay, here's where we're, if this was Bleach, this would be right about the time they got into Soul Society. And
nope.
Yeah. So, okay.
If anything, they're actually kind of having to stretch out the actual story in the anime because of how fast moving the manga actually is. So,
wow.
Yeah.
All right then.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, be interesting to see how it pans out. Then I'm certainly of the belief that you can fit a lot of good story into a short time frame in shonen anime, because Scryd is one of my favorite works of all time.
Yeah.
So yeah. Okay. Cool.
Mm-hmm. All right. So is that it?
Yep.
All right, Chris. What about you?
Yeah, so I have been watching a good bit of anime, Naruto Shippuden. Let's see where I'm at. I am in the Pain arc, nearing the end.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, before they finish up, they have to do this like stretch of episodes where they explain a bunch of backstory around Pain,
mm-hmm.
Which is a trend that I have been not happy with in this part of Naruto Shippuden. Because there's the big Itachi Sasuke fight, and after that ends, it's like four episodes explaining why Itachi, you know, did what he did in the Hidden Leaf Village and to his own people. And it's like, as pure lore, it's interesting, but for a show, it's mm-hmm. not. It's like you need your own. You need to just have, like, your own, what's it called, like, Cimmerillion for Lord of the Rings?
Mm-hmm.
Or it's just, here's all this backstory.
Yep.
You don't necessarily need for the main stuff, but if you want the extra backstory, here it is. They need that for this show. Because they love to explain everything in great detail, and this Pain stuff, they have been doing that fairly often. And it is annoying. Because a lot of the rest of the stuff is really great. Some great action. And it seems like they always have people outside of the fights to explain what's going on inside the fight.
Mm.
To explain, like, the Itachi Sasuke fight, there's one of the other Akatsuki guys that are just hanging out to observe the fight and explain to you what is going on. like why they're doing the things they're doing, all that sort of stuff. And it's a weird thing to have like commentary on these fights. Even though it kind of makes sense because you've not seen Itachi fight, so you don't really know a ton about what he can do and all that. And yeah, there's some really great stuff with Naruto learning the Sage Jutsu stuff. And taking on Pain, who has basically gotten to the part of the show where it's like, we're just going to kill a bunch of people you like. because it's been like 500 episodes so far to get to this point, and we need to take some of these people out. And then they go one step further than that, and I'm curious to see how it goes from here. But yeah, that's been interesting to get through, and I still have... I'm trying to see what episode I'm on. I think I still have like 330 episodes to go for shipping. It's like 500 episodes. And I am at, I think, 172.
Oof.
It's like, holy shit. I'm maybe a third of the way through this.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of shit has happened. But yeah, and on the kind of the opposite side, Dragon Ball Super, I've been watching, catching up to what is out now as far as the dub stuff. And I finished the Goku Black saga, which was really good, but also really confusing. But they put a nice bow on the Future Trunks stuff in a way that is nice. And also, the way they explain all the... who Goku Black is and all the other stuff that goes with that is just kind of just a little bit crazy for Dragon Ball, even because it is just a little bit of complexity involving the future splinter of this Earth somehow intermingling with the regular future of this Earth, and it's really complicated, but the best thing that you come to learn is that Goku doesn't know what kissing is. Apparently he's never kissed his wife. And Vegeta is just stunned by this. Like, how did you have kids without knowing what kissing is? Which, yeah, then they show a bit of the original Dragon Ball when they have Goku fights Chi-Chi before knowing who she is and the agreements they made. And sort of she kisses him then. It's like, you would think at some point she would teach him about these things, not let him be so ignorant of basic relationship stuff. But yeah, that's going some good places. I think there's still a good bit to go as far as the dub before they eventually get the new show. I forget what it's called, Dragon Ball Heroes, something like that. And I'm looking forward to that, but yeah, they definitely do some interesting stuff here. And yeah, as for games, I picked up Lumines Remastered on the PS4, so I got my soundtrack and all that. I need to get that transferred over to a USB stick and bring it over to my PC.
Yeah.
But the game itself, it's fantastic. It's as good as the original was on PSP. I would definitely recommend people pick that up on the PS4. I think by this upcoming Tuesday, because that is when the special bundle with the soundtrack is going to go away. It's going to be replaced by the basic version. But yeah, there's a lot of good content in there. I'm trying to beat all of Danreb's scores as fast as possible. I think I beat his main, like, basic challenge score. I doubled it right on the first attempt. And it's some of the
how are you guys' scores doing?
I've been doing a lot of the puzzle stuff, so I'm not really doing much score stuff right now, but I was messing around with some of the time challenge stuff, which is a kind of, it's a really nice mode because you kind of just have to go unconscious with your mind, because if you're trying to get too complicated with your setups, you're just going to fuck up and lose your score. So I usually end up doing really well the first or second time, and it just score just gets worse and worse each time I'm actually thinking. And yeah, so I think one of the trophies was for getting like 120 in the 3 minute one, and I ended up getting like my high score is like 119. It's like really annoying stuff. But the puzzle stuff is really nice as well. It gives you like a basic shape to try to build out of the other shapes, which I'm getting the more complex stuff where you have to specifically avoid making, it uses purple and white squares for the skin. So I have to avoid getting a 4 square of purples or else it just fucks up the whole puzzle. The white is what the puzzle image has to be made out of. And so one of the annoying things is they give you a basic circle that has, I forget how many blocks in it, but they make you do one that's a little bit bigger. It has three of each in it, so you know you're going to end up running into that scenario of potentially ruining that. And so you kind of have to do it in such a way that I ended up having to like restart it a bunch of times. It was super hard because you have to get that 4 square of purples block to drop, and then immediately have the right one to complete the circle on top in a good sequence right after it, within a couple seconds of each other. And so that's not an easy thing to do. But yeah, the game itself just plays really well. I'm looking forward to putting some more time into that.
I've been meaning to ask either you or Danrub about it, because one of the things that was kind of a problem for me with some of the Luminous skins was that there wasn't a lot of contrast between the colors. Did they fix any of that, or is it pretty much the same as it always was?
I think it's pretty much the same.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, you probably have to just kind of tough it through some of that stuff. And yeah, that's... I don't think it really changed much other than adding some multiplayer stuff. Yeah, it's definitely worth it. I think I'm on my third version of it. I think I have the PSP original, I have the PS3 version, now I have it on PS4.
No.
Except PS3 had like some special skins on it of its own. There's one that's a Little Big Planet themed. So, yeah. Alright, that's pretty neat. I definitely like them to like have some sort of expansion for this, or just go into like a Luminous 2, or just remaster the Vita game for the modern consoles.
Electronic Symphony.
That one's really good. Especially, that probably make more sense for the multiplayer stuff they have in there. The cube thing that you're kind of trying to build up as a community. That make a lot more sense on a platform where it's going to do really well.
Yeah.
Also been playing some more Phoenix Wright. I finished the fourth chapter, so I'm on the last one.
Mm-hmm.
I think so. Or I'm on the fourth one, I think. With the supposed Edgeworth murder. So it's sort of this weird scenario of you having to defend Edgeworth, who's been sort of your main antagonist through the rest of the cases. Taking on a much more annoying prosecutor who's just bossing the judge around. And the judge is like just taking it, just doing whatever he wants. It's like, and I just love the way the Phoenix Wright localization tries to tell you this is America. And it's like, this is clearly Japan.
Mm-hmm.
This is nowhere. This is, or you're somehow in Japantown, America. It's a really weird thing, but that's sort of one of the. It's more of a fun thing now at this point because they never lean into it at any point. Also been melting because it's just ridiculous how we had about a whole week of 90 plus days, and being outside a good bit of those days, it's draining.
And we're not even in August yet.
No. No, we're looking at a little bit of a cooler streak here. We had a nice thunderstorm yesterday.
Yeah.
Tons of rain, which is nice because it's so hot out that like stepping out to look around, my glasses were immediately fogged up coming out from the AC into the humid heat.
Oh.
It's like, oh, I can't see anymore. But yeah, and we're looking into like the 80s for the next couple of days, so that'll be at least nice. Yeah, I don't see any. Maybe next weekend it'll get a little bit hotter, but yeah, the other day I made the mistake of looking at my phone in the, the Weather Channel app, and it's like, oh, feels like 107 degrees. Like, I did not want to know this.
Yeah. Pretty much just an icon of it giving you the finger, basically.
Yeah, just should show a picture of the sun. Here's what
it's a picture of the sun giving you the finger.
Yeah, the sun from what, the Raisin Bran box?
Yeah, two scoops.
Yeah, just two fingers up.
Two scoops of this, asshole.
Yeah.
Okay, so was that all?
Yeah, kind of looking over this this big mid-year sale on PSN.
Mm-hmm.
It's ridiculously huge. It's like over 850 items.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is the biggest sale they've ever had.
Yep.
And I immediately bought like 5 PSVR games because they're pretty cheap.
Wow.
Also, yeah, which I got the new Rick and Morty game, which I've been wanting to get. What else did I get? I got a couple of shooters. Trying to see what else I got. I got Bloody Zombies, which is a like a brawler, 2D brawler kind of game. And Castle Storm, the VR version. I don't know why. Okay, I still haven't beaten the original version, so. But now I can play a little bit of it in VR. Yeah. Still All right. looking at others, but there's a lot of shit in here.
Okay. Alrighty then. Well, I guess it's my turn. So first things first, I, of course, am still playing the Kingdom Hearts collection. I am just about done with Birth by Sleep. I finished all the main scenarios. I started off what they call the final episode last night and immediately got my ass kicked. So going to need to rethink that a little bit. But after that, I'm probably going to... I'm not sure what I'm going to do after that.
Is that more of an episodic thing, Birth by Sleep? Is it they break
Well, it's basically there's like three there's three different characters there, and they each have like their part in the story, like their own path within the story. So when you play one, you play their path, and then you play the next one. They all occasionally interconnect, and then once you've because the thing is once you've played all of them and gotten all 12 of Xehanort's letter reports, as they call them, because they're like hidden in chests and stuff, you can then play the final episode. Okay. It is, I actually really like it. It's actually a bit darker than you normally would expect for a Kingdom Hearts game, but that's partly because, you know, it's like a prequel. And if you played Kingdom Hearts 1 and 2, you know that when you're going in, things are kind of fucked. And Birth by Sleep basically tells you how it got fucked in the first place. And so, yeah, it's quite good. It's very challenging at parts. And the tracking mechanic, you know, where you can the lock-on mechanic isn't always as refined as I would like it to be, because whenever like characters teleport away from you, you lock off and you have to re-lock on them again, and yeah. Sometimes that can fuck with the camera,
yeah, especially when you don't have two sticks.
Yeah, and that can especially be an issue towards the end, because the last boss fights of all three areas are ridiculously hard, even on the beginner mode.
Yeah. So they just have camera on the shoulder buttons?
Well, can still move it with the right analog stick, okay. But it whips around when the action can whip around so fast that sometimes it takes a little bit to get refocused.
That's one of
that
the major
aspect of game designing. I am not a fucking cameraman.
Yeah, Kingdom Hearts is not great at cameras.
Never has been. I distinctly remember the first one giving me fucking stomach ulcers because of...
Most everybody else figured it out, but Kingdom Hearts never did.
Yeah.
Hey, we'll just go to the platforms that has even worse camera controls.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. I've also got a... So after I'm done with that, I'm probably going to play Kingdom Hearts Recoded and probably...
That's what the GBA game?
No, that's the...
That's the mobile game, the first one.
No, Recoded was a mobile game that they remade into a proper console game.
Yeah.
And then there was, I think it was Chamber of Memories, which was the GBA game.
Okay.
And that one's unique because basically, I mean, it's still the same mechanics, but they basically went back and remade the whole game. Because the original GBA version was like, other than like the first, the first game, it was mostly 2D. So they went back and redid the whole thing, so it's all 3D now.
Okay.
Still hard as balls, though, because it's all card-based.
Yeah.
And it's still like an action RPG.
Yeah, you figure it out. 358 over 2 days?
Yeah, I'm going to do that one, too. And then after that, I got to go back to GameStop and get Kingdom Hearts 2.8, because apparently that one's got the little mini story. Well, on top of having Dream Drop Distance and one of the other handheld...
0.2, Birth by Sleep.
Yeah, that's the one that actually has sort of the... It's actually the newest. Like, it's meant to be sort of a bridge. It was one they... That one's actually something they remade specifically. They not remade, but made specifically for that collection, so as to sort of bridge it between then and Kingdom Hearts 3.
I like reading the story descriptions on these things. It's set immediately after Dream Drop Distance when King Mickey reveals he has a few secrets to confess.
Like, yeah, that's the thing about fucking Kingdom Hearts. They took goddamn Mickey Mouse of all people and turned him into a badass warrior.
Yeah.
And yet he still has that, my Mickey voice. It just...
I'm going to slit your throat.
God damn it.
Wow, that was outstanding.
I'll see you in hell, Xehanort!
Let's see, there's also Kingdom Hearts.
He shows up a lot in Birth by Sleep, too.
Yeah. Let's see, Kingdom Hearts X back cover. It's a cinematic film.
Yep.
New Tale of the Four Tellers reveals new parts of the series' history. Utilize technology being developed for Kingdom Hearts 3 and is 1 hour in length.
Yeah.
I don't know who the Four Tellers are. I assume that's like every sci-fi story. These are the long-ago race that used to exist.
Yep.
Leaves behind their secrets. That is what everybody wants.
Mm-hmm. Other than that, I've been reading, of course, as usual. I've been reading, early last month, they released the first volume of something I've been wanting to read, like, in physical form instead of, like, an online translation. Series called Legend of the Condor Heroes. It's written by a guy named Jin Yong. His real name is Louis Cha. But he is the biggest selling living Chinese author in the world. He's actually one of the best selling authors in the world, period. His work is like absolutely just everywhere in the Chinese speaking world. And he does wuxia fiction. So, you know, like, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, House of Flying Daggers, that kind of thing. That's that genre. And he's actually considered to be the guy that brought the genre into respectability out of its, like, sort of pulp-like origins. And it's supposed to take place during the Tang Dynasty, and it's just really freaking cool. it's a lot of fun. They did a lot of work in going into the translations, because, you know, translating Mandarin into English is not the easiest task, as you can probably imagine. But they actually did a really good job here. I did see a review somewhere where somebody was like, well, why did they have to divide this up into three books? Like, I know trilogies are popular and everything. Well, the reason is because that's how it was originally published. Those big, long Chinese books are usually like divided up into different similar size volumes. So that's how it was originally published. In fact, I think it was actually when it was actually officially originally published, the various installments were even shorter because it was originally like a insert in a newspaper. So each installment was like about the length of a comic book.
Okay, so it was serialized originally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the fact that it's only three volumes is we're actually pretty lucky.
Yeah.
And it also doesn't help that, you know, the Condor Heroes is in fact itself a trilogy. So the actual Condor series. So other than that, obviously I'm still taking advantage of my Netflix subscription. And recently discovered probably my new favorite show on TV, which is Glow.
I haven't been meaning to watch that.
Yeah, so basically what it is it's a fictionalized, very fictionalized, in fact, it's damn near completely made up of the birth of something that actually used to exist, the Glamorous Ladies of Wrestling, which was a thing that was like a wet wrestling promotion that happened from 1986 to 1990. It was like a... I'm not sure if we got it over here, but apparently it was like a big thing over on the West Coast. Like, it would show up every Saturday morning, and basically what they did was, you know, obviously it was women's wrestling, but what made it stand out was the fact that they kind of knew going in that they couldn't, you know, equal the kind of popularity of the WWE, well, WWF at the time, but... of World Wrestling Federation at the time. So they knew that their overall sort of thing would be, you know, much smaller and more niche. So basically what they did is they took the campiness of what makes, you know, not just today, but especially back in the 80s, professional wrestling, and they just kind of ran with it.
To 11.
Oh, yeah, they did. They basically just took, like, all the notorious, like, stereotypes and stuff, and basically they had what was basically comedy and satire as well as, like, actual wrestling. And the thing was, truth be told, all but, like, maybe one or two of these women were actually professional wrestlers. Most of them were, like, models or actresses trying to get in the show business. And so, like I'm pretty sure, like, there's a whole, like, but one thing you can do, you can actually find the original, like, 1985 pilot for Glow on YouTube. And it's about as batshit as insane as you would think it was. So what they did here is, in this, the Netflix show, the story is that this woman played by Allison Brie, yeah, who's trying to make it as an actress in Hollywood, of course, and this being the 80s, you can kind of, yeah. like, there's even a part where she, like, sort of manages to corner one of the audition people in the ladies' room. And basically is asking her, like, why won't you guys take me seriously? And the person she's talking to is another woman, by the way, obviously. And she basically says, because Hollywood doesn't want strong women. That's why. You intimidate people. And so she kind of is at a point where she's like, I don't know, maybe I'll just quit or whatever. And then she... gets a call from that same individual, basically telling him, first, if you ever try to ever try to corner me in the bathroom again, I will have you buried somewhere in the middle of the, landfill somewhere.
Long drive down a dark road.
Yeah. And two, she says, I think I might have something that you actually may have been wanting to look for. And it just so happens that the place that what it is what eventually becomes Glow. And the guy who is like the quote unquote director of Glow, who is played by, Mark Maron. Yeah. Playing this guy named Sam Sylvia, who's like a B movie director. And, decides that, he's going to try and do this because he's trying to get funding to make another movie. And he's basically like a combination of like Stan Lee and a porn director.
Okay.
And of course he inhales like mountains and mountains of cocaine.
Because the 80s.
Because the 80s, right? And it is really funny. So basically Alison Brie ends up becoming she gets cut like twice during the auditions, and basically she ends up getting manages to get back in because her and while she's like doing a sort of quote unquote audition in like a wrestling getup that she made and is like trying to pretend to be like all the guys she saw in the WWF, it does not work. It is the most awkward thing ever. As she's in the ring, she ends up getting gets in a fight with this woman who's also her friend named Debbie, played by Betty Gilpin, who is mad at her because she found out that Ruth, that's Alison Brie's character, was having an affair with her husband.
Well,
and so she takes Alison into the ring and basically kicks her ass. And Sam sees the whole thing, and he ends up sort of having a vision, quote-unquote, where the both of these are, like, all tarted up and wearing leotards, and Journey Separate Ways is playing in the background, and does, 80s. And Ruth, you're going to be the villain. You're going to be called Zoya the Destroyer. And then Debbie, you're going to be the heroine. You're going to be Liberty Bell. Can you guess who Zoya the Destroyer is supposed to be? Russian.
Yeah.
And that's actually one of the things this show does, is it plays up the fact of how, in hindsight, and especially in the 80s, a lot of these personas we created for pro wrestling were... Yeah. Yeah, kind of racist.
Yes, maybe we're so
not
slightly.
Even really kind of.
No, it was like 100%. Like, there's this one character played by Kia Stevens, who apparently is actually a wrestler professionally. And she plays a character named Tammy Dawson. And in the, I swear to God, I'm not making this up. Her persona in Glow is called, and I'm not kidding, the Welfare Queen.
Oof.
Yep.
Yeah, which is a take on that, infamous person who basically had, like, I think 3 or 4 different aliases and was collecting welfare kind of thing.
Yeah, she's actually the source of the entire Welfare Queen myth. And that is, it is a myth, I want to make it clear.
Yeah.
Like, this wasn't just some, the woman they're talking about wasn't just some random individual in the middle of the Bronx. It was a career criminal, and it was just one of the criminal enterprises she was involved in.
Yeah.
But there's also another character who is an Asian woman named Jenny Che, and she ends up getting the name Fortune Cookie.
Oh, jeez.
There's also a character played by Brittany Young, who she's actually a fairly large woman. Like, she looks like someone you would expect to may or may not have been related to Andre the Giant. She wasn't, but in the show, she basically is part of like a pro wrestling sort of lineage. And she ends up is in the show, even though she's not actually Latino, she's like interracial, like her father's black, her mother was white. Mm-hmm. She ends up getting like a Latina persona, and they call her Machu Picchu.
Oh, dear.
See, do you see what I'm talking about here? They just really are playing up the fact that
it might still be less racist than the WWF.
It gets better. There's this one character that's played by Sutina Mani, who is a actor and comedian. She's also I'm not sure. I know she's from. I think she's Lebanese. And in the show, her persona that she takes on is called Beirut the Mad Bomber.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
I think I need to watch this show.
You really do. It's hilarious. And one more thing before all that, before we move on, there was that course, like I said. I had to go out of town last week because my cousin, Candace, was getting married.
Yes.
Yeah, to her boyfriend, which she'd been with for, like, I think 3 years at that point. So let me just sort of set up the kind of event for you, because I already hate weddings, but there was shit going into this that was already driving me up the wall. So the good thing is that we only had to, like, basically stay there for one night. The reason I wasn't able, of course, the reason I wasn't to get out on Friday, of course, was because, well, Phil. And I actually did think we were going to have to leave that night, but we actually didn't have to leave till Saturday afternoon, but whatever. Point is, we had to drive up to Statesboro, which is about an hour and 45 minutes. And of course, this is in like 96 degree weather. And we got a nice, relatively nice room to stay in at the Marriott, which was fairly large. We got two beds. I got a whole space where I could put my computer and stuff in for the night. It was fairly nice. Problem was is that we got there like, I think it was like an hour and a half before we had to be at the wedding. So we were really rushing when we got there. And so, of course, I had already taken my shower that morning, so I didn't take a shower. My dad and my mother had, too. The only person who still had to take a shower was my dad. And my dad is the type of person who will put everything off until the last minute. And so he goes into the shower, and as he's showering, he slips. And he sprains his foot, and he hurts his knee. Now, the thing is, the next morning when me and Mom both had to take our showers, we didn't slip at all. We had no slipping problem. There was enough grip. So apparently he had gotten so in a hurry that he had accidentally slipped against a slipless surface and hurt himself. And of course that put him in a bad mood, as you can imagine. We got all that done. We got all dressed. Then we went out to the church. I would find this out later on from my grandmother. My cousin had basically had a minor breakdown the night before. pre-wedding jitters and all that.
As you do.
Yeah. And then apparently when she came the morning of the actual wedding, when she came to the church, she was basically, out of her goddamn mind. Like, I guess her mood had taken a complete swing, and now she was, like, happier than a chipmunk on crack.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, I figured that'd be going the opposite direction.
Nope. But basically, my grandma described her as she was, like, mad as a hatter when she got there. So, I hate weddings. I hate everything about them. I need to just make a small bit of a story here, which this is the story I told when later at the reception afterwards. I was actually this, like I said, this was my cousin's wedding. I was actually the ring bearer at her parents' wedding, like about 28 something years ago. And I hated every single moment of it. Because, I mean, you know, I was having to wear a jacket and a tie. And, you know, there was this thing, this pillow I was wearing on my hand that was supposed to have a ring on it. And they were telling me, it's like, you can't move it, you know, or the ring will fall off. And the ring's very expensive. And it was hot and it was itchy. And everything kept going on and on. And then the reception came and people went to, like, one room. And then they went to another room. And then we went back to the room before and then another room. And I kept asking my parents, Mommy, Daddy, what's going on? I want to go home. I want to watch Nickelodeon, you know?
Yeah.
So as you can imagine, that kind of has tarnished the way that I've looked at weddings ever since then. So I've only been to, like, one other wedding besides this one. And, God, just where to begin? I hate the fact that weddings aren't really about the bride and groom. They're really about the people that are there.
Yeah.
Because if they had taken my advice, they would have just eloped, you know? I hate the color white.
Yeah.
Because it's just the absence of color. And I have no idea why our culture chose that as, like, the wedding color. I hate all of the, like, the dumb ritualism and stuff. I hate the fact that there was apparently a couple of praying mantises that had gotten on the wedding candles.
Uh-oh.
And so, you know, like, during a wedding, one of the things to do is that the bride and the groom have, like, an individual candle, and then they use those candles to light a bigger candle.
Yeah.
Well, a praying mantis had managed to get on Candace's kettle. And so when she was trying to pick it up, she's like, wait, I'm supposed to pick that one up? And she's like, I don't – and remember, this is all going on where they're playing, you know, Mozart's wedding music at the organ. And
you don't think there would be somebody that would be right there to be like, okay, we got to get this shit off of this.
Yeah, well, that ended up being one of the bridesmaids who is a farmer's girl who reached up, grabbed it, and crushed it in her hand.
Okay, then.
Hicksville, man. Also, yeah, and this is more of a personal thing. Leonard Cohen's Hallelujah is not a fucking wedding song.
No.
It's not a Christmas song either.
No. And I don't care if you found that cute little version that you could put the bride and groom's name in to make it seem more relevant. It doesn't work.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Two words.
Also, if the wedding photographer was going to tell me to move a little closer one more goddamn time, I was going to put my thumbs in his ears and roll him down the street like a goddamn bowling ball.
Okay. So, not a fan.
Yeah, I also hate all the people who were suddenly around you saying, hey, they're getting married, when's your turn?
I hate that part of the family.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, everybody else is at this point in their lives, why aren't you there?
Everybody else jumps off a bridge, are you going to too?
Yeah. With my luck, I'll probably end up living my life as a monk, but yeah. In the middle of frickin' Tibet somewhere, but... And finally, it's just, oh yeah, and then the freaking preacher from Candace's church, who was also there with the priest, because the groom's family is Roman Catholic. I think I forgot to mention that. He had to get up there and sort of make this statement about how in our culture, in our world, where the definition of marriage is hazy by the day, I'm like, motherfucker, this ain't about you.
Oh, damn.
Sounds like the black preacher they had at the royal wedding.
Yeah.
Where you could see the queen there, and she's just like, oh, God.
Yeah.
What the hell is this guy talking about?
Mm. Yeah.
But, so as you can imagine, I was basically miserable.
Yep.
So. Reception was nice, though.
Yeah, that's the one thing you can say about it. At least it was good afterwards. So.
Yeah. I got tipsy on champagne and got on stage with a band and sang Ice House's Electric Blue. At least that's what they tell me. I'm not sure how good I was.
Okay. Well, I have to get in touch with your kin and see if anybody recorded that.
If they do, they need to tell me where they are so I can destroy their phones.
Yeah.
And wipe out all traces of that ever happening.
Yeah. Oh.
All right. So, okay. So, anybody got anything else they want to add before we move on?
Nope, I'm good.
All right. Well, then, I think it is now time for everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And this week, I thought, you know, it's summer, right? In fact, it's July, you know?
Yep.
And, you know, being summer in the South, it's that time of year again. You know what that time of year is?
Barbecue.
Yep. And it's pretty much like in a country like ours where like all of our cuisine is heavily inspired by various indigenous and immigrant populations, you know, Mexican and Chinese and Italian, you know, stuff like hamburgers and hot dogs, which, you know, have their roots with the German population, and pizza, which has its roots with the Italian population. There's only a handful of things that we could consider like genuinely, indigenous American cuisine, and barbecue is one of them.
And depending on which part of the country you're in, it's religious.
Yeah, religious and like night and day as far as like the type of barbecue you'll be eating.
Like you can tell the difference between like a national chain barbecue versus like the homemade stuff.
Yeah, and you know, it's pretty much the one kind of cuisine in America that's pretty much universally respected throughout the world because it's very labor intensive. It takes a long time to prepare, and there is little to no, like, corporate, like, in between. You know, like...
You can't take a shortcut.
No.
Can't just microwave it.
You know, this isn't like, you can do with, like, a hamburger and, like, make a bunch of them, fry them up, you know, or grill them on the stove, like, real quick in, like, a few minutes. Real barbecue usually takes you hours. Sometimes an entire day to make properly.
And I've seen a lot of like specialty restaurants that like reuse the same oil for years and years and years, and that's like their special touch.
Yeah. And barbecue, like we said, barbecue, it is like the barbecue styles of the southern U.S. are like extremely diverse, and they all are basically very represented by their particular state with very unique fixings, basically. Like, you know, you do Carolina style, and it's usually, it'll usually either have like a rather really simple type of sauce, or it might have like, you know, a spice rub, and no sauce at all. You can go down to like Texas, and it's like mostly beef ribs, and they use like a sweet tomatoey sauce. Or you can go like Missouri style, you know, Kansas City, or... And, you know, you'll get like vinegar and tomato, sometimes a little bit of ketchup as well. You know, it's really diverse, you know. But I had already talked about that type of barbecue before. So instead, I want to talk about sort of the more lesser known styles of barbecue that you can get in the United States. Because of the like predominance of Texas and, you know, Kansas City style barbecue. You know, that's pretty much the standard for most people, I think. Like, when they think barbecue, that's what they picture in their head, right?
Yeah.
But there are a handful of other styles that you can find that are actually pretty unique depending on where they are. So here are some regional styles from various places you may not have heard of. So... let's start off with Alabama, for example. Alabama's big approach to barbecue is that they use white sauce. That's usually like mayo and vinegar based. They use it as a as a sauce, as a marinade, as a dressing. Its consistency can be either very thin or very thick. Sometimes they'll mix it with vinegar or mustard. In fact, Northern Alabama, they mostly use chicken instead of beef or pork. Another example, a more lesser known, and I kind of wish Teresa was here for this one because she probably could tell us about it, Kentucky. So there's two distinct traditions of barbecue in Kentucky that both involve different styles of meat and different types of preparation. In the western part of the state, the meat of choice is mutton.
Hmm.
You know what mutton is, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
Sheep meat.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, it is. And they'll usually, like, it's usually, like, mutton shoulders, which are, like, big things that they'll put on, like, some cinder block pits with coals, hickory, oak. Sometimes they'll throw in some sassafras leaves, too. And their sauce is actually Worcester based, like Worcester sauce.
Right.
That's like the basis of their sauce that they use. And like I said, it's preferably the choice, the choice meat being the shoulder. That's like mostly the western part. The eastern part is much closer to the kind of like the type that you'll get in. You know, in and around the other parts of the South. So it's like, especially the Carolina style. So it's like pork shoulder smoked over live coals for about an hour, sauced with a vinegar and pepper sauce, often served with some white bread. And then you go up to the Purchase area, and it's a mixture of the two. and then you'll have places like Oklahoma. And Oklahoma is unique because they're is a sort of a mixture of Southeastern and Texas. Because for those who don't know, Oklahoma was like a big, one of the major areas of the Trail of Tears. So the natives and African Americans who went up that area brought sort of their barbecue styles with them. If you get modern Oklahoma barbecue, it tends to be a hybrid, similar to the type of sausage you get in Kansas City or Memphis. But instead of, like, pork, they tend to use beef, like Texas. So it's like ribs, sausage, brisket. Hmm. They'll also use, in fact, they actually barbecue turkeys on Thanksgiving. Also, they created something known as the Oklahoma bologna sausage.
okay.
Yeah. It's the, like, I'm just like, yeah, I'm not even going to ask.
It's like, you don't need to know. it's tasty.
Funny enough, you know what state in the South doesn't have its own, like, barbecue style? Florida.
Hmm.
In fact, when it comes to barbecue, there's not really many barbecue places at all in Florida. The ones that you do are usually like corporate chain places.
Yeah.
You know, like Sonny's or Smoking Pig, one of those places. And then, of course, amongst all the others, there is Hawaii. And, of course, you know, the Hawaiians and basically Polynesian peoples in general have their famous luau pigs. You know, whole hogs spit roasted over a fire. Yeah, with an apple in the mouth, that type of thing.
Yeah.
Whole hog barbecue. That shit is amazing.
I'm really hungry right now.
Yeah. And when I say whole hog barbecue, I mean the whole damn thing.
Yep. the whole thing.
Everything from its nose to tail, like delicious crunchy face meat, you know what I'm saying? There's just something about, you know, eating your meal while it's looking at you at the same time. Yeah. And that has been yet another installment of Brandon's Random Factoid.
That made me hungry again.
Yeah, I have that effect on people. All right. So, with that out of the way, it's now time to start the show proper. And as always, we have to start with our asshole of the week. And no, it is not Donald Trump. It is not anyone in the Trump administration. Really, there wasn't anyone else we could find that could beat this guy. It's the guy who went into the Capitol Gazette and killed 5 people and injured a bunch of others. So, Chris?
Yeah, so the Capitol Gazette is the local paper in Annapolis, Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so this guy, we're not going to say his name, but he very much had a grudge against the media in general, but also this paper.
Yeah, apparently he'd been writing threatening letters to them for a good 3 years at this point.
Like 3-4 years, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess, I think people just found out he had been sending threatening letters to other places as well.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so he ended up actually following through on his threats and went to the Capitol Gazette and started shooting at them. Took out 5 people, injured a bunch of others, and amazingly, there were still people that were like live tweeting what was going on. So if you have any sort of reservations about the dedication of journalists, like there is, they would have all the reason in the world to be shooting themselves in terror, and they're sitting there trying to document what's going on.
Yep.
For the public.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so they worked through it, actually put out a paper the next morning. Obviously, they had only one topic they could talk about.
Yeah.
For the headline.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they have a picture here of what the opinion page was in the article here, which, it's just mostly blank page. It says, let's see if I can get the zoomed in. Today we are speechless. This page is intentionally left blank today to commemorate victims of Thursday's shooting at our office, and they list the names. Tomorrow's page will return to its steady purpose of offering our readers an informed opinion on the world around them that they might be better citizens.
Yeah.
And this just kind of is a result of the continued hostility around journalism.
Yeah, so we kind of do have to bring that up, don't we? So the first big one, of course, that goes into this is, of course, President Trump himself, who has been talking about how, quote-unquote, fake news is the enemy of the people.
Had even said that a few days prior to this attack.
Yeah, but even bigger was freaking just human dumpster fire Milo Yiannopoulos, who basically, when someone had said that he had asked him for a statement, and this was before the shooting. I want to emphasize that statement on something or other, like a byline or something. He responded back with, "I can't wait for the day when the vigilante death squad starts shooting all of the reporters."
Isn't that stochastic terrorism?
I don't think it possibly could. But the thing with Milo is that he has that way of sort of, because what he did after this happened. It's his M.O.
Yeah, I was joking.
Yeah.
He owned the libs.
In his, that man is a fucking human tumor.
Yep.
I mean, there's really nothing more that you can say. And I mean, for the record, even though there was like for 1 or 2 days, there was some speculation. Yeah, the guy who did this, he was a Trump follower.
Shocking.
And he considered himself part of the alt-right. I mean,
well, I guess they can't disown it now.
Nope. If there's anything good that came out of this, it's that the fucking alt-right is imploding right before our eyes, but that's not fast enough for my liking.
Yeah.
But to get that, just disgusting taste out of our mouths.
Well, there's some other stuff related to this as well.
Oh, you need to go into this.
Yeah, so I think this was later that day. President Trump was at the White House. Talking to reporters, and somebody starts asking about the the shooting in Annapolis, and he just decides to start walking away. They say, can you please talk to us about the dead reporters in Annapolis? Do you have any words of condolences for the families, Mr. President? Why are you walking away? He just continues not saying anything, just walks away, holding his hand up like, no, we're done. And also the mayor of Annapolis sent a letter to the White House asking them to put the flags at half-mast in honor of the
victims. And he refused for a while, too.
Yeah, for a few hours, and then I'm guessing somebody told them, you know, how stupid that was, that they should do it anyway.
Yeah.
And so they did. Yeah.
Yeah, he's a scumbag. I mean...
still keeps talking about how the news is fake media, all that stuff. Yeah, it's like, you can't sit here and keep bad-mouthing the media when they are willing to put their lives on the line to get the stories they do. And they're lucky if their only stories are just boring local things.
Yeah.
They do their work to inform the people.
So I guess at some point somebody in the administration got a hold of Trump and told him, look, man, this ain't looking good. You got to get out there and do something. So he basically, I don't know if he got out at a press conference or tweeted or whatever, but he basically said journalists should not have to live in fear of violence. Something to that effect.
Yeah.
But let's be honest, it's as, at this point, who really believes him?
Nobody. at this point, I'm getting the distinct impression that people are starting to look at him like just a big old bumblefuck.
Oh, it's already starting to hit his base now, because there's a story around here. I can't remember where it was. Let's see.
Did you see what a number of the GOP senators were doing on the 4th?
Yeah, they were in Russia. Moscow, specifically.
Yeah.
Oh,
eight of them. Yeah.
Celebrating the 4th in an enemy territory.
Yeah. But basically what it is, you know, those tariffs have started going into effect.
Yeah.
And in and around the Midwest, they've started talking to people who've basically said they felt like they were, and I'm quote, tricked by the devil.
Yeah.
Because they're starting to see the effects of it on their businesses. And as you can imagine... a lot of produce is rotting out in the fields because they don't have enough people to pick them all in time.
Yeah, I saw something about, there's a big ship with a ton of soybeans that's trying to head out to China.
In fact, in China, it was like the number one thing on Weibo, which is like their big social media platform. All of them were cheering on that soybean. Boat to beat the tariffs. They're like, go soybean boat, go.
We saw somebody joke like, oh, this new rock movie is not exactly interesting.
Yeah. For the record, it didn't make it in time. The tariffs hit like just as it was like, I think it was like 20 something miles off the coast. So
yeah. And soybeans are one of the biggest exports we send out to other countries.
Yeah, I'm sure those soy farmers are really starting to feel it now.
Yeah.
And I think that amongst everything right there is probably the sign that even if he somehow does manage to survive this investigation, I don't think he's going to have a second term.
No.
Because once it finally hit them, everybody suddenly realized that he was full of shit.
Yeah.
So.
It's not like anybody was telling them this was going to happen.
Oh, we were all telling. Like, look, man, the dude's gone bankrupt 6 times.
You could ask anybody in New York.
Yeah.
So much.
Rain. I mean, did you know they recently took away the tax-exempt status for Trump Tower? Because he's not the resident there anymore.
Yeah, and they're also putting something through to get rid of the tax-exempt status for churches, right?
Yes, that's right.
Hey, the evangelicals They're trying to burst your bubble.
Yeah. See, that's one of the things that the Christian right has been, like, harping on all these years is make sure to not tax the churches. Okay, so I don't – okay, so some of you who are outside the U.S. may not know this, so I'll go ahead and say – because I don't think this is the case in a lot of the Western world, but churches in the United States are tax exempt because they're considered to be like a public good. And since, you know, churches are generally a lot of source for, like, charity revenue and stuff, so the idea is that, you know, as long as the church, if you let churches be tax exempt, they can funnel all of this money to, you know, people who need it. And, you know, that sounds good. You know, I mean, it had good intentions, I'll say that much. But then you look at people like Cleflo Dollar, who's saying he needs a $30 million private jet.
Yeah, the televangelists.
Yeah, they exploit that loophole for that very reason.
Yeah, he needs these expensive jets to spread the word of God.
Yeah. But, yeah, they actually very quietly in the recent sort of bills that they're putting forward put in taxes for churches. Yeah.
And then you just sit back and enjoy the show.
Yeah. Oh, that's I don't think the news has quite hit the evangelical community just yet.
No, it hasn't sunk in yet.
But it will.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, so to move on from that to our hero of the week, it is, well, it's the mayor of London, Sadiq Khan, who approved the use of a giant Trump tantrum baby balloon to fly over London while Trump is visiting the UK.
Yep. And this thing is great because it was crowdfunded.
Mm-hmm.
They raised about £16,762. Which is about $22,273.
Yep.
Yeah, so that is going to be going up. They got the approval from the mayor to be able to do this. Let's see, it's 6 meters high. It's going to fly about 30 meters up in the air.
Mm-hmm.
Which I don't know if this is an actual... I assume this has to be like a Photoshop, but they have a picture of it flying over by Big Ben.
Yeah.
And it's almost near the top.
Yeah.
So it's.
I think
it's
that's like visible. A proof of concept, yeah. But.
And yeah, the I guess they also had the Lord Mayor of Sheffield ban Trump from his city, whose name is Magid. He is an immigrant. He's a Somali refugee who ended up becoming the mayor, the youngest. Let's see. Yeah, he was elevated to the office in May, becoming the youngest ever person to hold the job in Sheffield. Made it clear he intended to shake up the world of politics. So he tweeted out, I, Magid, Lord Mayor and first citizen of the city, hereby declare that not only is Donald J. Trump a waste man, but he is also henceforth banned from the great city of Sheffield. I further declare July 13th to be Mexico Solidarity Day. Yeah, I guess a waste man is a British slang for someone lacking maturity and achieving little with their life.
Yeah.
Which fits them pretty well.
Yep, pretty much.
Yeah, pretty much. I've had people talking to me say they wish that when he steps in foot in England, someone like either the Queen or the Prime Minister puts him in cuffs and drags him off to The Hague, but unfortunately that's not going to happen.
No.
But, yeah, so look forward to seeing that balloon.
Yeah, that's going to be good.
Those of y'all out there in London, remember to keep your phones out so you can take pictures.
Oh, this will be everywhere.
Yeah. And maybe make a bunch of miniature ones so you can hand out when where it went. Because from what I've been told, Trump is going to be largely avoiding London for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
All right. So now we're going to start off for the proper show proper, and our first story of the night is, of course, a Trump story, specifically the detention policy that Trump administrations had for asylum seekers has officially been blocked by a federal judge.
Yep. Yeah,
because it was so clearly illegal.
Yeah, it violated the Trump admin's own policy.
Mm-hmm.
So they're uniformly denying parole to asylum seekers who had passed their credible fear interviews. Yeah, so they're supposed to actually let them do the interviews and see if they have a legitimate cause to seek asylum in the country. And if so, then they get to, you know, come in and stay. If not, they get sent back, which immigration courts are already terrible enough.
Oh, yeah.
It's run by the Department of Justice, which means,
Jeffy Sessions.
Sessions is in charge of these things. Ultimately. And so he has set the sort of standards and such, and they actually put kids on the stand.
Yep, 3-year-olds.
They say, oh yeah, they know what's going on, they can defend themselves, and it's like, nope. Lawyers who have kids have actually, you know, put out videos
yep.
talking to their kids about this, like putting them on their own trial, and they obviously don't know the gravity of what's going on.
Nope.
But yeah, these are probably mostly adults they're talking about, but yeah, they've been basically denying people any sort of legal passage into the country, which forces them to try to get in illegally, and they arrest them for doing it illegally. It's like, you can't
come here. You have to go in through the asylum port channels, and then they go to the asylum port channels, and they turn them away there.
Yeah.
So whenever somebody tells you about this stuff, saying, well, they just need to, if they want to seek asylum, they need to go in through the asylum channels. They're trying to go through the asylum channels, but they're not letting them in.
Yeah. Yeah, so the judge wrote here, parole rates have plummeted from over 90% to nearly zero.
Yep.
And the numbers here are irrefutable. And so, yeah, that's, they talk about, let's see, one plaintiff who's a former ethics teacher fleeing political persecution in Haiti.
Mm-hmm.
He's been detained without parole in Ohio for more than a year and a half, despite asylum officers determining he had a credible fear of returning to his home country.
Yeah.
He says here, I have not breathed fresh air or felt the sun on my face, and I never know if it is cold or hot outside, if the sun is out, and if the suns are changing.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so they say this ruling means the Trump administration cannot use indefinite detention as a weapon to punish and deter asylum seekers. That's a good thing. People should be getting a fair shot, because even before, like, immigration courts have sent a lot of people back to their home countries and to their deaths. Because they were being fleeing, you know, gangs or other threats. And guess what? Those are credible threats. But some of the judges just want to get through these cases as fast as possible, or just don't really have any interest in being fair. And so they send a lot of people to their deaths. And that's not how it should be.
Nope.
All right. So, damn, it's, at least there are people actually trying to oppose this shit that are in power and succeeding. So
yeah, we got the ACLU fighting.
Like crazy.
Yep.
Yeah.
So they're next,
they're gonna be lacking work anytime soon.
Yeah. All right. So next up, we now know who is going to be the new deputy chief of staff for Trump's Office of Communications. It's going to be Bill Shein, former Fox News executive.
And guess what he is specializing in? Sexual harassment.
Yep.
He is the one that's very much tried to deflect that stuff for the longest time at Fox.
Yeah, he's basically the guy responsible for keeping all that shit, trying to bury all that shit back when he was at Fox.
Yeah.
So
yeah, there are other people at Fox News, executives, current ones. They're like, this guy should not be having this position. He is.
Yeah, that's from Fox News, by the way.
And yeah, so then he gets the backing from one Bill O'Reilly and one Sean Hannity, you know, people who have been guilty of this shit.
Yep.
Yeah.
One of whom lost his show, the other is somehow still there.
Yeah. It's, you can't make this stuff up, unfortunately.
Mm-mm.
Nope. One of Roger Ailes' right-hand men.
Yep. Yeah.
Oh, God. The only solace I have at this point is the fact that we're kind of starting to see the glass house cracking.
Yeah.
Well, there's a few holes in it at this point.
I hope it shatters at some point.
I mean, it took a monster like Trump for it to happen, but It's happening.
Yeah.
Now on to some relatively good news. Scott Pruitt, the notoriously just cartoonishly corrupt chief of the Environmental Protection Agency, the one who had to use thousands of dollars of taxpayer money to get quote-unquote tactical pants.
He refused to fly but first class.
Yeah, thousands of dollars for personalized pens.
There's the... What was it? The $50 a day suite he was living in?
Yep.
The condo rental that he got off of. I forget what place he got it off of, but that whole thing is hilarious if you look into it. His security called the medics in because they could not get a hold of him. They thought he was unconscious, potentially dead. He was taking a nap on a Wednesday afternoon.
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck are you doing taking a nap on a Wednesday afternoon when you're a fucking government official?
Yeah.
No, you're supposed to be working, you know, protecting the environment. That's kind of the agency.
He's passed out in his condo and in such deep sleep that his security guys thought he was dead.
Yeah.
He had to break down his door. It's like, what the fuck?
Yeah. And as some of you also may know, he was actually confronted in public at a restaurant by a woman who didn't get up in his face. She got up, talked to him very calmly, very cordially. Mr. Pruitt, I think you need to resign. She had her child in her arms, and she gave all these reasons why, and then she walked away. Mm-hmm. And a couple days later, he resigned. So he is no longer the chief of the EPA.
Yeah, he cited the harassment as a big part of it.
Really?
And so people are like, oh, this shit works.
Yeah.
Fucking treat these people like the scum they are, and they will not feel great.
Yeah. Then then after the news broke, she tweeted to President Trump and said, hey, President Trump, where are you having lunch?
Oh, that's easy, the Mar-a-Lago. Yeah.
But yeah, that shit totally worked. So we've included also here a guide to sort of the just enormous ethics investigations that have been going on around him. It's pretty thorough. And
yeah, there's a couple for travel violations, taking first class seats at taxpayer expenses. Yeah, a couple for those. Some for security detail for him saying he requires round-the-clock security protection, even for trips to Disneyland and the Rose Bowl. Not paying those guys, having them work like off the clock, so having to do like pay adjustments to pay them quite a bit of money off as like a repayment for that stuff. So those are issues. There's like lots of spending thing. He had a fucking secure phone booth installed in his office, $43,000. Let me see, where's the...
Like, at that point, it's like he's just trying to find ways to spend taxpayers'
soundproof phone booth, complete with silence, ventilation, and noise lock paneling to keep conversations from being overheard.
It's basically the cone of silence from Get Smart.
You're the fucking head of the EPA. What the fuck do you need a fucking spy-proof phone?
Yeah,
like it's for his conversations with Putin, obviously.
Yep.
Yes, there's more for. The pay raise stuff.
Mm-hmm.
There's offering pay raises to the people he liked on his staff, and demoting those he didn't. very much playing favoritism in a way that's not ethical. Lobbying stuff. A bunch on conduct, one for the EPA's shakeup of its science advisory committees, including dismissal of members and the selection of replacements from oil and power companies. There's a couple that are just
what I would call it, but that's
okay. Yeah.
Gutting is what I would call it.
Yeah, and then there are a few more that are just pending. For like contract for having somebody search his office for listening devices. Thought he was bugged. A lot of shit.
A real scumbag.
Mm-hmm. And, like, one of the most corrupt people that has ever been put in an office that high.
And that's saying something.
Yeah, especially for this administration.
Yeah. All right, so
Still bad news was part of this, because the guy that's replacing him is the deputy, what's his name here, Wheeler?
Mm-hmm.
He is a former coal lobbyist.
Yeah.
And
the only difference is that he's not as cartoonishly, open about his corruption as Pruitt was, so.
Yeah, I think I've seen that he is much more by the books guy.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's just that the books that he's, thing. It's just that the books he's going by are fucking Mein Kampf.
Yeah. It's that he can do everything that Scott Pruitt was doing as far as, policies and legislation and such, and not be an idiot.
Yeah. That being said, give it time.
Yeah.
Now, moving on to our next story, this has to do with House Rep Jim Jordan. Jordan, years ago, was a coach at Ohio State University.
Yeah, for the wrestling program.
For the wrestling program. While he was there, there was another gentleman who was... I can't remember who this gentleman was.
Dr. Richard Strauss.
Oh, so he was a doctor?
Yep.
Like an athletics doctor, sports medicine, that type of thing?
Yep.
Yeah. Apparently, and as it's now coming forward now, this doctor was basically molesting all of these. Now, were they teenagers or were they?
I believe students.
So they were university students?
Yeah, lots of athletic students, yeah.
Yeah.
And I believe the time frame they put for this happening was about 1978 mm-hmm. to 1998.
Yeah.
20 years.
Yeah, and then the dude killed himself.
Yeah, and if you thought the guy that abused about 500 women at...
Larry Nassar?
Yeah. If you thought that was a lot of people, they're estimating... this guy had at least 1,500 to 2,000 people.
Yeah, because like we said, this dude was in this for like 20 years.
Yeah, and people obviously looked the other way. And Jim Jordan is one of the people that
looked
some
the
of the
other way
that were there while he was there saying, no, I specifically told him about the shit this doctor was doing.
Yeah.
And he basically said, let's see. So it's sad for me to hear that he's denying knowing about Strauss. I don't know why he would, unless it's a cover-up. Either you're in on it, or you're a liar. I love Jimmy to death. I had a head-scratcher. It was a head-scratcher to me why he would say he didn't know anything. Doc used to take showers with the team, even though he didn't do any workouts.
Yeah, that's kind of a smoking gun right there, isn't it?
Everybody used to snicker about how you go into his office for a sore shoulder, and he tells you to take your pants down. And I think there's even a point where they talk about how he actually responded saying, well, if he ever does any of that stuff to me, I'm going to kill him.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, that's reasonable. You should also have reported it.
Yeah.
Because this is heinous shit. And and the other thing is Jim Jordan is one of the people being groomed for potentially replacing Paul Ryan.
Yeah, who's, Speaker of the House.
Yeah.
Which, of course, is a lot very powerful position.
You can't have a guy with this kind of reputation.
Mm-hmm. Speaker of the House, I think, is like the third in line to the presidential succession.
Yeah.
So if something happens to Trump and Pence, he's the guy that ends up becoming president.
After Pence, it's Paul Ryan, then it's Orrin Hatch.
Mm-hmm. People are wondering, sort of why this is all coming out now.
People know that that stuff that happened wasn't just a one-off thing.
Yeah. I think it was a few years ago, Jerry Sandusky kind of kicked the whole thing off.
Yeah.
And now we hear about all these stories all the time now because it was him, it's Larry Nassar, and the fact that these people in power were willing to sort of look the other way while it was all going on.
Yeah, and so now Ohio State's going to be doing a full investigation on all of this,
mm-hmm.
find out exactly what all happened and to what extent.
Oh, but it gets even worse because Jim Jordan is being a big crybaby about it. And he's saying that, you know, he's like, they're harassing me. I'm going to call the police. You know, it's frankly disgusting.
Yeah.
But
now he's saying he's going to cooperate with the investigation, anything they need.
Yeah.
And yeah, so basically his official statement is he never saw any of it, never heard about it, and never had anything reported to him.
Mm-hmm.
While he was there. And,
which is a bald-faced lie, apparently. Yeah,
a number of the rest sources are saying, no, I specifically told him about this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he was going in to get his hand worked on, and he told him to pull down his pants.
Yeah.
Or he started pulling down his pants.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, what the fuck are you doing? And I think the one guy is like, yeah, I didn't really know how exactly to talk about what happens and what it actually was, because that's definitely a thing that happens with people that are victims of this stuff, is they think it's, oh, I did the wrong thing. I should not have, you know, done this. It's all on me. And then they realize, oh, wait, there are other people. This is awful. We need to, you know, do something about this.
Mm-hmm.
And the unfortunate thing is this doctor is dead. So he's not going to be able to actually get any of the punishment he should.
Any retribution that should be coming to him. But
yeah. So now
there are the people. So now there's the people who stood by and let it happen.
Yeah.
And one of those people being
those that are still in power, especially.
Mm-hmm. So is this sort of the prelude to Jim Jordan basically resigning?
Hopefully it's not like some other people that try and write it off.
Yeah.
Say, yeah. No, I didn't do anything. I don't know anything. So stop asking me about it.
I do not recall.
Yeah.
All right. Well, next up, another story that's just going to really piss you off. So in the United States military, if you're an immigrant and you decide you want to become a citizen, one of the things that you can do, a pathway to naturalization, is you can actually join the Army.
Yep.
And go through basic training, and they'll basically put you on the fast train to citizenship.
Yep.
Guess what the United States CIS just ended this week?
That program.
Yep.
Yeah, so the U.S. CIS is United States Citizenship and Immigration Services for the Army. And yeah, they had this program where basically immigrants who wanted to have a more simple fast track to getting citizenship for themselves was to join the Army.
Mm-hmm.
Do their service and all that, and they would get that taken care of. And it seems like let's see, the offices for this program at Fort Benning in Georgia, Fort Jackson, South Carolina, and Fort Sill in Oklahoma were all closed on January 26th.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, those offices reported to the Department of Homeland Security. And, yeah, so closing those offices means the end of expedited citizenship for recruits in the future and currently. So they're basically kicking a bunch of them out of the Army.
Yeah. Speak.
Saying, hey, you're not legal, so get out. Or letting, even some of them are still going through basic, so they're going to be kicked out at the end of that.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, I don't know why I'm even doing this if they're not going to hold up their end of the bargain.
Yeah. That's just super villain levels of evil.
Yeah, it's almost like the same people that want to get transgender soldiers out of the Army.
Yeah. Oh, gee, do you mean that there's some mix between the people who want to keep transgender out of the people are also racist?
Yeah, like they want less people for the military that is getting way more money.
Mm-hmm.
The most recent budgets. So you're getting like at least $60 billion more.
Mm-hmm.
You can afford to take care of these few people.
Yeah, especially if they're willing to put their lives on the line to become citizens.
Yeah, it's like you're making them you're asking them to take the ultimate chances with their life
mm-hmm.
for security of the country. It's like, just take care of their fucking citizenship.
And all of this right around July 4th, too.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It's the kind of thing that makes you just go,
Yeah. All right, well, that's the end of the soul-crushing stories that we have. So,
yeah.
All right, so next up we got some more not-so-soul-crushing. So, first story. In France, we got a notorious criminal, who managed to escape from a prison in Paris via helicopter.
Yep. And if you think it sounds like some Michael Mann shit, it'll stay tuned. Because the story goes places. So yeah, this is a notorious gangster named Redouane Fayed.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly notorious because he, at the supposed end of his criminal life, wrote up a book about it.
Mm-hmm.
Did a press tour and all that. So he was actually notorious.
Yep.
So yeah, he was helped by three heavily armed men with assault rifles who had hijacked a helicopter that was, the pilot was a flight instructor
mm-hmm.
who was waiting for his student to get there, and they hijacked him,
mm-hmm.
Held him hostage and made him go with them. So yeah, they had two gunmen and balaclavas, used smoke bombs and angle grinders to break into the visitor's room where Fayed was talking to his brother. Third man in the prison courtyard guarded the helicopter and its pilot. They flew to the nearby Gonesse area. Where it was found by local police. I believe they basically set fire to it. Yeah, so he is 46, serving a 25-year sentence for a failed robbery during which a police officer was killed.
Mm-hmm.
And this is his second prison break. In 2013, he escaped after seizing four guards as human shields and blowing several doors off with dynamite. And he staged that escape less than half an hour after arriving at a prison in northern France.
Mm.
Spent 6 weeks on the run, so he fucking knows how to do this shit.
Mm-hmm.
He is not a stranger to dramatic escapes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they have nearly 3,000 French police are working on this manhunt, so I don't think they have him yet. Yeah, so let's see. Yeah, they called it a spectacular escape. It was an extremely well-prepared commando unit that may have used drones to survey the area beforehand. The prison courtyard where the helicopter landed was the only area not protected by anti-aircraft net.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they said it was because inmates do not use it except to leave the prison. So they basically stormed the entranceway did their business. Nobody's injured, so that's good. It happened around 11:20, so early mornings. The captured pilot was released, later taken to hospital, suffering from shock. His accomplices had taken the flying instructor hostage at a small flying club in Fontenay-Tresigny. I was waiting for a student. They have a map here of the distance that was covered in this, which is pretty good distance. They initially got out of the helicopter and ran into a black Renault Megane, which was seen heading for the A1 motorway. That getaway car was later found burnt out at a shopping center car park in Aulnay-sous-Bois, a Paris suburb. So they just love burning out shit as soon as they're done with their vehicles. So they swapped to a white van, is what witnesses have said.
Yeah.
So a little bit of history on this guy. He was born in 1972 in a notoriously rough part of Paris. In the 90s, ran a gang involved in armed robbery and extortion in the French capitals. He has said his lifestyle was inspired by Hollywood gangster films, including the Al Pacino thriller Scarface.
Mm-hmm.
He has devoted to U.S. director Michael Mann's stylized crime thrillers, especially Heat. He once approached Mann at a Paris film festival and told him, "You are my technical advisor." Fayed claimed to have watched the film dozens of times to hone his skills as a bank robber. In 2009, he wrote a book about his experiences of growing up in Paris' crime-ridden suburbs and graduating to a life of lawbreaking. Claimed to have turned his back on criminality, but a year later was involved in the failed robbery, which earned him prison stretch in Row. French police have nicknamed him L'Écrivain, the writer. in a nod to his autobiography and subsequent media tour. One of his most recent prison supervisors said he was never in conflict with guards, but that, quote, "we must always be wary." In the corner of his mind, he never lost the idea of escaping. Behind all his manners, he was very polite. He always hit his game. And, yeah. And I guess it's also not the first time somebody's escaped French jail by helicopter. In 2001, three armed robbers fled a prison in Draguignan, southern France, after an accomplice hijacked a helicopter from an airfield in nearby Saint-Tropez. 2 years later, inmates accused of running an international drug ring escaped a remand center near, I don't even know, Azon, Provence, by similar means. So, yeah. People in France not escape from prison.
Yeah.
Helicopters. Well, this guy's basically set at this point.
Yeah.
He's going to probably do another prison term for, I don't know, probably won't be all that long, really, because he'll get off good behavior. Then he'll sell his movie rights, and then Michael Mann will make a movie about it, and then he'll be a millionaire.
Yep. Well, all right, so next up. So as everybody knows, of course, the World Cup was going on. Is it still going on?
Yeah, I think they're in their finals now.
Yeah, so the World Cup's been going on, and of course, the rest of the world is entranced by it. We Americans could care less because, you know, it's not real football.
Also, we're not in it.
Yeah, also, we're not in it because we totally flunked. But Japan was in it, and Japan really wanted to win, too. Mm-hmm. And they had this sort of a social media craze involving this octopus that was supposedly psychic, and apparently it was supposed to predict the results for the World Cup. And then Japan lost. And so the octopus was killed and sold for food.
I don't think he was killed after the loss. He was killed before. He predicted the first three, the results for the first three games that Japan played.
Yeah.
Which I think what they did is they placed him in a pool with three baskets of food representing Japan winning, Japan's opponent winning, and a draw. Whichever it swam towards first became its prediction. And yeah, so his name is Rabiot, R-A-B-I-O-T, a giant Pacific octopus caught in Obura, Hokkaido. And yeah, the fisherman that caught it is Kimio Abe, a fisherman. He decided that his business was more important than keeping the psychic octopus alive for the knockout stages. As he said, "I hope that the second Rabiots will also give all the outcomes correctly and that Japan will go all the way." And yeah, so there are pictures of, hey, there he is on a hook. Yeah, people like to have weird animals predict things, I guess. Whether they're actually predicting them or not. I think China...
Also Japan.
I think China had a cat that was predicting games. Then it died. So, not a great time to be an animal predicting sports outcomes.
Yeah.
Also Japan.
Yeah, also Japan. It's a very Japanese thing to do.
I wonder if he charged more for Rabiot.
Probably.
I would hope.
All right. So next up on the next story we got. So do you know that no matter where you are in your life at any given time, you're within 5 feet of a spider?
Doesn't surprise
Sounds
me.
Do you know that some spiders can fly?
Wasn't aware of that.
Well, there's a species of ballooning spiders that we now know can fly really far with the help of electric fields.
Yep. Yeah, so
there is everywhere.
Isn't the spider in Charlotte's Web able to do that?
To a point, yeah.
Yeah. That's how she becomes to meet the pig. Yeah, so this is a new study that has figured out that how these guys are able to fly beyond just wind currents. They figured out it's electric fields that are able to help these guys out. So the electric static forces can help lift them up, even when the air is not going, giving them much lift.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, so These spiders enable to fly up to 2 miles high, as well as going really far. They've been known to often land on ships in the middle of the ocean and are often the first colonizers of new volcanic islands.
Yep.
Although they don't have wings, they're actually pretty good at flying. She explains that a spider will go to a high branch on a tree or the top of a tall blade of grass, stand on tiptoe with its abdomen pointing up, then release long strands of silk and become airborne. Yeah.
That explains a lot, because I don't know about you guys, but I have found spiders in the weirdest places.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I've also seen like the random strands of silk or webbing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Why is that there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how is it apparently stretching across the entire lake?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. There are also mass ballooning events where thousands of spiders suddenly take to the air, which is a nightmare.
Yeah, that is legit horrifying.
Well, that's almost as scary as the rafts of fire ants.
Yeah. So if you've ever wondered what it is that will, in fact, bring about the extinction of the human species, well, now you know.
Evolution.
Yep.
Yep.
All right, so these next two stories are Canadian.
I want to apologize for both of these.
Yeah.
Because we apparently have stupid people sometimes.
Yeah, so Phil, as the resident representative of the nation of Canada, you should be ashamed of yourself.
I disavow all of both of these people, frankly.
Yeah.
McDonald's makes Canadians go a little bit loopy.
Yeah.
Yeah, so a guy in Canada was getting food delivered from McDonald's via, Uber Eats, which is like an Uber service that will like bring takeout to your house.
Yeah. Instead of driving you to somewhere, they drive food to you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Problem is, the McDonald's food arrived cold. So a rational person would have been something like, "Hey man, this is cold. Could you maybe go get me a refund or
stick it in the microwave?"
Yeah, I could just stick it in the microwave for a second. It'll be fine. No, this guy decides to call 911.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this is set in Hamilton.
Oh, of course it is.
What Providence is that?
It's Toronto Junior.
Oh, okay.
The Hamilton police are reminding the public that it's, as they write here, even a very unhappy meal at McDonald's is no reason to call 911.
It's Canada. Of course, that's how they end up replying.
Yeah, officers were called to a McDonald's in the city Sunday by an irate customer who received a cold hamburger and fries after ordering them through Uber Eats. It wasn't clear whether the restaurant or food delivery service was to blame for the not-so-fast food, but the unsatisfied customer was reminded a cold meal was no reason for an emergency response. They get first calls to police are more common than you might think. This gave them an opportunity to, do a public lesson.
Mm-hmm.
Calling 911 with nuisance calls ties up our lines, makes it difficult for people with serious emergencies to get through to our dispatchers. This is meant for life and death emergencies. And I saw the police station that had a Twitter account was making jokes about what if the Hamburglar was stealing these burgers.
Yep.
Yeah. God damn it. So people just... Yeah, they don't think, or if they do, they don't think properly.
Yeah. Well, this isn't the end of the Canadian shenanigans, because there's a different Canadian man who's come forward and saying that he is auctioning off his McDonald's cheeseburger and fries that is 6 years old.
Yep. This is in Ontario.
Two for two on Ontario.
Yeah.
And he's put these up on eBay for $29.99.
Mm.
From 6 years ago, they were placed on his shelf and are surprisingly decent looking still. As he says, the fries are stunningly good looking. The fries look like they were purchased this morning. The burger itself has darkened a little bit. The bun is about as hard as a hockey puck, but it looks just like it's brand new cosmetically, which I look at the picture here, no. The cheese is brown.
So
he lives on a farm in Steffa, Ontario, north of London. Downsizing his home, decided to sell the meal on eBay with a starting bid of $29.99.
Mm-hmm.
As he states there, original owner, never eaten. Oh, they got the link to it. It's not a direct link, it's just to McDonald's tag on here.
God.
Oh, I think it's been taken down.
I freaking hope so.
It serves for 6-year-old McDonald's cheeseburger and fries and zero results. So zero bids as of Thursday morning, but I assume he probably had to take it down. It basically has petrified itself. It looks very sellable. He said, I'm going to assume that somebody's going to rehome my cheeseburger.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a term in Canada, rehome?
It's, I guess, if you're, like, dumb.
Okay. It's like a farmer would say.
Yeah.
Alexander said he asked his daughter to buy the McDonald's meal on June 7th, 2012. As an experiment, he heard of fast food burgers lasting for years without rotting. Wanted to find out if it was an urban legend. It's not. We live in the country. We've never seen a fly land on it, ever. For comparison's sake, he has a 5-year-old homemade burger and fries that he placed next to it. And
that didn't fare so well.
Yeah. The cheese on the homemade one, especially the French fries, the potatoes, just look like bits of charcoal right now. Yeah. Also looks like they have a ton of dust on them, because it just put them on a plate.
On a shelf.
Yeah. Yeah. I figured you'd do something similar to McDonald's and put them in a bag.
Yeah, but no.
That's not a scientific experiment. They're two different... it's contaminated. Asheville Miss fast food relic once it sells. He said, I've been looking at it for 6 years, so now it's moving. Yeah, it's a thing, but I'm sure we'll move on. Yeah, so I guess he tweeted this out. I'm selling a 6-year-old McDonald's cheeseburger and fries. You know you want to buy them. It's a tiny URL link. Get your own piece of undying history today. And make sure to include, like, CBC in their tweets. See, One Bread Paperclip, CTV, and The Ellen Show. And somebody retweeted this saying, how to get a call from CBC producer within 5 minutes.
This is basically, that happened, probably.
Man, that's a hoarder that has a problem. Thinks his things are more interesting than they really are.
Yeah.
It's definitely not worth $30. I'll just say that much.
Yeah. You can just spend, the $5 and go to McDonald's and get your own.
Get a fresh one.
You can eat them.
At least you could eat that one.
They will serve a purpose.
Yeah.
It's not even in a glass container.
No, it's just the bag.
Like, display case. Like, fucking make that shit like a museum piece.
Yeah. So, anyways.
All right. So next up, next story of that, we got the communications world running Punchline, which is Samsung, whose phones have now, for reasons that they're looking into, have started randomly sending photos to contacts via text.
Yeah, that's a thing that actually has happened.
And the weird thing is, you don't know that it happens.
Nope.
No.
Until somebody potentially replies, like, why the fuck did you send me this?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so they don't know why it's doing this.
Mm.
People suggest that, let's see, even one person had their whole photo gallery sent to somebody in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
Sorry if you've got bad pictures on your phone. Probably shouldn't be.
It's a crapshoot.
Like, yeah.
They might end up at somebody else's phone. From what Samsung said, apparently there was an error in implementing the new RCS protocol, which is supposed to be a replacement for text messaging.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Apparently they goofed.
Yeah. Some people suggest that it's related to T-Mobile.
Yeah. T-Mobile was like, no, dude, that's not us.
Yeah. Which is what they would say.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if they don't really know what's going on.
So
that is messed up, and they are working on a fix. No real ETA for that. They're saying if people have had this happened to them or are concerned about it, they can call them. Yeah, I think the main thing you can do to stop it is go to your permissions and turn off storage access for your texting app.
Yeah, until they figure it out.
Yeah.
That would also mean that you can't send text photos to people in text, but
that's probably good.
That's probably a good idea.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Great. Well, compared to, you know, phones exploding and catching fire, this is not really, like, as huge of a deal, but...
It depends on the situation, I guess.
Well, yeah. Well, I what guess it, if you're what the guy whose dick pic ended up...
which person.
Yeah.
Especially since you don't know what happened. Yeah. But I guess this also happens because it's using Samsung's own message service. Oh, like, just use the Android one. Like, stop fucking around. Especially now that I think Android just added a way to access that stuff on PC.
Yeah.
So you can do your texting on your PC like iOS does.
Mm-hmm. All right. God.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's not as bad as, like, you know, spontaneously exploding.
At least you can just replace the phone.
Yeah.
This you can't fix the problem if you send the naked pictures to the wrong person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, next up, so, of course, as we all remembered from our youth years ago, Star Wars Episode I, The Phantom Menace, came out. As everybody can guess, it was highly anticipated when it was originally announced. People were going nuts.
Yeah, the first new Star Wars in, what, 16 years?
Yeah. And, of course, it came out, and it was...
Yep.
It was just cinematic.
Yep, basically.
And, of course, what was probably the biggest target of derision in that movie?
Oh, Mr. Jar Jar.
Jar Jar Binks. Well... As we've previously have shown on this very show in the past, Star Wars fans are just the worst. Just the worst.
Nerds in general who grew up on Star Wars.
Yeah.
Considers it like a personal religion.
Yeah. Yeah.
It actually is a religion for some people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Ahmed Best, the guy who was the actor... The actor who played Jar Jar Binks, apparently he got some really bad harassment and abuse from Star Wars fans. That got so bad that this week he publicly came out and admitted that he was actually considering suicide because of it.
Yep.
Jesus.
And it's the sort of thing like you cannot like the movie, but don't fucking attack the people. It's not really their fault.
Yeah.
It's.
I mean, he was a young guy back then.
Yeah,
It was a job for him.
Yeah,
you know,
and it was a great opportunity. You could be in the new Star Wars. Like, who wouldn't take that?
Right.
So he put out a tweet talking about how it'll be 20 years next year since Episode One came out. Said 20 years next year, I faced a media backlash that still affects my career today. This picture of him with his son looking at a bridge. Said this was the place I almost ended my life. It's still hard to talk about. I survived, and now this little guy is my gift for survival. Would this be a good story for my solo show? Let me know. And so a lot of people like Peter Mayhew, Ryan Johnson, Frank Oz came out and supported him. Frank Oz even said he loved Jar Jar Binks. I know I got ranked over the Coles for saying that, but I just will never understand the harshness of people's dislike for him. I do character work. He's a great character. Okay, go ahead. Shoot. Give me all you got. But you'll never make me change my mind.
He's a great character. He just didn't belong in that movie.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. And, like, obviously in the same context, Jake Lloyd also received a ton of abuse. As a result, and it's like, this guy's a little kid.
Yeah.
You know, at least Ahmed was 25 years old at the time.
Yeah.
But... Even then, like, I imagine most actors that are not, like, big stars are probably very self-conscious about their work.
Yeah.
Especially when they're not, when they have, like, a big history of it. When they're early on, like, just getting their first bits of acting in. And having it, one of your first jobs being so reviled that people will literally just As I'm at best as here, I had people come to me and say, "You destroyed my childhood." That's difficult for a 25-year-old to hear. It's like, yeah, that's some of the toxic shit that people have with pop culture stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's like, if you don't like it, cool. Move on.
Yeah.
Find the good stuff that you do like. Yeah. Ask people is never the way to respond to that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And get him back in a Star Wars movie, for fuck's sake.
I think he has been in other Star Wars stuff.
Well, he's been in 2 and 3.
He was in Clone Wars, the show, mm-hmm. when he voiced Jar Jar Binks.
Yeah.
As well as some other characters.
Yeah. Would Jar Jar still be alive by the time of the
Clone Wars?
Well, I don't know. I don't know
the
what
modern by the modern canon started with the Force Awakens.
I don't know what his species, what their life lines would be.
Longevity of them, but
they probably go like what 40 years from episode 1 to 9.
So he'd be fairly old by that point.
Yeah.
But,
so I mean, just get him into the modern Star Wars movies.
Have you seen the shots of him actually on set?
I have.
it's great because it's basically him in with the arms and feet of Jar Jar Binks,
mm-hmm.
in like black clothing and such to downplay the human in there, mm-hmm. And he has a Jar Jar hat,
mm-hmm.
top of his head to sort of have a place where people can look at where his character be. And I guess at a point they were still not sure if they were going to be able to do good CG for that character,
mm-hmm.
or whether it would have to be a suit that he would have to wear.
Yeah,
I guess they figured out that they could do the CG, which actually looked pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Looked really good for that time.
All right. Well, now for some more movie news. Apparently, there is a Sonic the Hedgehog movie in the works. A live action one.
A live action CG hybrid.
Yeah. And supposedly, the guy who's going to be playing Dr. Robotnik is none other than Jim Carrey.
Or Eggman.
Yeah. So much nope. Just nope.
Just I can't see it.
Nope. Do not see it. I also don't see why you would want to do a live action CG hybrid.
I mean, didn't we already learn our already learn our lesson with Sonic 06?
That is the worst case scenario.
Yeah.
Yeah, as far as games, but they haven't tried a movie yet. And I guess Sonic Boom hasn't done terribly.
Yeah, I guess Sonic Forces sold okay. So
Sonic Forces sold okay. Sonic Mania sold really well.
Yeah,
and deserved to.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Yeah. So they are. This is going to be a Paramount film.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. The picture is going to star James Marsden and Tika Sumpter. It's directed by Jeff Fowler. I don't know what he's worked on. Let's see. Oh, there's multiple Jeff Fowlers on IMDb.
Yes.
Which one is the good one? Okay, they got Sonic on this one. Okay. Let's see. Oh, his first director job was Gopher Broke, a short in 2004. And that's Gopher as in a gopher.
Yeah.
I did visual effects on Where the Wild Things Are. Animation research and development. Not much here.
A lot here. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a couple things in like 2002, 2003, 2006. Where the Wild Things Are is 2009. It's like, all right, 2019, Sonic the Hedgehog. Imagine he was cheap.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Probably, which doesn't bode well.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, so Pat Casey and Josh Miller writing the script. Sonic must stop Dr. Eggman from completing his plans for world domination. It's basically the gist, okay? That's every Sonic game.
So far, so good.
Like every Sonic game so far. You know, the only thing I can see is that it couldn't possibly be worse than the Super Mario Brothers movie. So,
yeah.
You know, you say that, and yet...
Well, I mean, There's an extra level of incompetence that happened with that movie. So,
and you know, they did like last minute script changes to that movie.
Yeah.
Also, they just didn't want to make a Super Mario movie to begin with. They basically wanted to make their own version of
Blade Runner.
fucking Blade Runner. It was just that
I think they used actual like sets and props from Blade Runner.
I definitely I can see it.
It happened.
So
yeah. I think this is at least going to be helped by people know what Sonic is for the most part.
Carry is,
and yet somehow here we fucking are.
I also love reading articles about games because they switch between calling him Robotnik and Dr. Eggman.
Mm-hmm.
And also here's the paragraph about the franchise. Sonic the Hedgehog has spanned several iterations from Sega consoles in the 90s to mobile fan and absorption into the Nintendo Mario Brothers video game universe, which, no. That's for the Olympics, but that's not the Mario Brothers stuff. But series has sold over 80 million physical copies of games, over 350 million units across package software, and mobile downloads. Sonic has also spawned 5 TV series in its history.
And only one of which was actually good.
Yeah. So we'll wait and see, I guess.
I think isn't Eggman supposed to be Sonic's like nickname for him? Or actually, I think Eggman is the name he got in Japan.
Yep.
Robotnik is the one they gave him in the, I guess, the English.
Sega of America did.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was Sonic Adventure where they realigned those.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he's just Dr. Eggman.
Everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Everybody's like, no, Robotnik was kind of the better name.
Yeah.
But he's also egg-shaped, so I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just call him Dr. Eggman Robotnik.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
So is like, are they going to be using like anything from that proof of concept fan film they put out years ago?
I doubt it.
You think they even remember it?
The one that Jaleel White reprised his role as Sonic. And, like, it had people like, you know, Doug Walker was in it, and Angry Video Game Nerd was there.
I doubt it, to be honest.
I don't know.
Although, now that you mention it, if that's the way that they do go, then maybe.
Okay.
So, yeah, I don't know. Jim Carrey is, a pretty big name in Hollywood, so... Yeah, even though he might be on the tail end of his career, but anyway.
The guy they actually got to play Robotnik in that fan film was actually really good. Like, he legit made him look like a sinister figure.
Yeah.
but anyway, so, penultimate story for the night. We now have Netflix. They've announced their anime slate at Anime Expo. So, Chris?
Yeah, so Anime Expo, I think, is about done at this point. But yeah, there's a... Netflix had their big thing talking about all their animated stuff that's coming up. So yeah, we got Ultraman, a Netflix original series coming out next year, directed by Kenji Kamiyama and Shinji Uramaki, produced by Production IG.
Well, you're talking about Ultraman, so there's like 50 originals.
And, yeah.
It's like Kamen Rider. It just keeps going.
Yeah, okay. The description is an action drama centered around a man possessing the spirit and DNA of the legendary hero Ultraman as he wears a metallic Ultra suit and fights against evil.
Yeah, and the thing is, you got to understand, in Japan, the Ultraman name carries a lot of weight.
Yeah.
Like, and I mean, like, legitimate weight. Like, do you guys know what the Seiyun Award is? It's basically like Japan's version of the Nebula Award or the Hugo Award. And the most recent award for best novel that they got that year. And keep in mind, they don't give these out to just anybody. In fact, there have been years where they didn't give them out to anybody.
Okay.
It was an Ultraman novel.
Okay.
Like, it was that good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They got a little poster here that looks pretty good. Let's see, next one, Kengan Ashura, produced by Larks Entertainment. Let's see, this is pretty neat. Kazuo Yamashita is an ordinary 56-year-old man who one day is summoned by the chairman of his company and hired as a gladiator. These hired gladiators engage battles called Kengan matches to protect the corporate rights of businesses they represent.
Yep.
This sounds
business gladiators.
And I want to watch it.
Yeah.
So he has assigned to battle a mysterious Kengan fighter named Oma Tokita. Both men join the Kengan Zetsume tournament with the hopes of winning the spot as chairman of the Kengan organization. So there's going to be a tournament. So that's probably going to be pretty good. Let's see. Yeah, Aggretsuko is getting season 2.
Yep.
Sweet. Yes.
Of course it was. Like, I mean, was there really any doubt?
Yeah.
Like, of that was, like, really their breakthrough right there.
Yeah. Seriously, Netflix needs to release the soundtracks for season 1.
Yeah.
Let's see. Next one is Godzilla, City on the Edge of Battle, produced by Polygon Pictures and Toho.
And written by Gen Urobuchi.
Is that the
Godzilla
So
that's what
guy?
He's doing these days.
Yep.
All right. Yeah, so it's a sequel to Godzilla, Planet of the Monsters. I assume that must be also a Netflix thing.
This is where my usual Gen Urobuchi shout out. Everyone needs to watch Kamen Rider Gaim.
Mm-hmm.
If you haven't already, just putting that out there.
Okay, yeah. Right. So this epic reimagining of the Godzilla world in a futuristic setting pits humans and robots against the biggest Godzilla ever seen in interplanetary struggle for survival. Yeah, there's a big giant mech behind this CG Godzilla.
Yeah.
That's anime.
And they're all probably going to die.
Yeah.
This is Gen Urobuchi. Nobody gets out alive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This seems like a mix of CG and anime.
Mm-hmm.
It looks good.
Yeah.
I like what I'm seeing.
Yeah, that is out on July 18th, so pretty soon.
Hmm.
Let's see. Next one is Dragon Pilot. Yusone to Masaton. That is Studio Bones' new thing.
Mm-hmm.
That is out September 21st. Recently stationed Air Self-Defense Force rookie Yusone Amakasu is chosen by a dragon concealed within Gifu Air Base to be his pilot.
Yeah.
This is like Dragon Transformers.
Yeah. And for those of you who are curious, it's written by Mari Okada, the woman who wrote Gundam Iron-Blooded Orphans. So
okay.
Definitely got a seal of quality to it.
I just like the design of these dragons.
Yeah, they have like really big armor and they're so adorable.
It's like Transformers fucked dragons.
This is
the race that came out of that. Okay, that's another big news, Castlevania season 2 is out on October 26th, so just in time for Halloween.
Yeah. Obviously we already knew that a season 2 was coming, we just didn't know when exactly. But now we do.
Yep.
Let's see. What's the story here? The Belmont clan is trying to save the Eastern Europe from extinction at the hand of Vlad Dracula Tepes himself. Trevor Belmont, last survivor of his house, is no longer alone. He and his misfit comrades race to find a way to save humanity from extinction at the hands of the grief-maddened Dracula and his sinister vampire war council.
Mm-hmm.
So he has a vampire war council now?
That may be a spoiler.
Okay.
Because he didn't at the end of the first
season. Is this where the Frankenstein's monster and the
mother shit comes around? Probably.
Probably.
I've brought together all of the monsters of Transylvania.
Yeah.
To fight against the humans.
Yeah.
Cannon Busters is the next one.
The last one they've got on the list, apparently.
Yeah. This is launching on April 1st, 2019. I don't know who this creator, director, producer is. LaShawn Thomas.
He's the guy behind stuff like Black Dynamite and the Boondocks.
Okay, Legend of
Korra. And he did a bunch of stuff for Legend of Korra as well. So
okay.
he's got cred, is what I'm saying.
Children of Ether on Crunchyroll. Okay.
And he's also done some stuff for, I think he's also done some stuff for Batman Brave and the Bold, Green Lantern First Flight, Ben 10. He's been around.
This kind of looks like a Tezuka thing.
Yep.
With the big eyes and all that. The show follows the adventures and exploits of Sam.
Actually, it looks more like a Studio Trigger thing.
Yeah.
To be honest, but it looks great. It looks bananas, but...
Yeah, Sam, a high-end friendship droid, is joined by a quirky, discarded maintenance robot and a brash, deadly fugitive. Together, the unlikely trio embarks on an unforgettable journey in a fantastic and dangerous world in search of Sam's best friend, the heir to a kingdom under siege.
Mm.
So, okay, yeah. A sex robot, a cleaning robot, and another dude. Yeah, this is going to be insane.
Yep.
Oh, boy. Nothing that I'm seeing here looks bad. It all looks top-notch.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And they seem to have, like, a lot of the big anime houses working on stuff for them.
Yeah. And it's headed by, like, an American creator.
Yeah.
Oh, now I remember where I heard about it. Okay, do you guys know Udon Studios? The guys who publish the Street Fighter comic book? Yeah, Cannon Busters is a comic book series that LaShawn Thomas did at Udon.
Oh.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, I guess we know where that project went. He actually...
yep. Continued.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Netflix is getting a lot of good anime stuff. Amazon's, like, seems to be kind of drawing their niche as far as science fiction stuff goes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And looks like Netflix is... like staking their claim in the anime.
Yeah, Amazon's spending a lot of their money on like traditional TV stuff, especially with like the Lord of the Rings thing coming up. Netflix is like, hey, anime probably doesn't pay much anymore, so we're gonna pay a little bit more than that and get you guys all working for us.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's probably a lot better return for them. Not having to worry about discs and all that. At least not initially.
Yeah. All right, and finally, our last story for the night. I'm actually surprised this hasn't happened before already, but we now know that a live-action Gundam movie is in the works.
Yep.
Sweet.
Legendary Entertainment is co-producing this with Sunrise.
Mm-hmm.
They announced this at Anime Expo. I'm not sure they have any other details here. It's overseen by Kale Boyder on behalf of Legendary, with the Sunrise creative team. Let's see. They're also working on the Detective Pikachu movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's also the same company that's also doing the Skyscraper, the Dwayne Johnson. It's not Die Hard, but it's Die Hard.
Mm-hmm.
yeah.
The Skyscraper movie, yeah. It's not... we swear this movie is not Die Hard, but it's Die Hard.
Yeah, with very little detail, it's kind of hard to really, you know, decide whether or not it's going to be good.
Yeah.
But
well, if we've seen what the traction so far has been for Western anime adaptations have been, I don't really think I have to go much. Have to keep going. I mean, for the record, we still have Battle Angel Alita is still supposed to be coming out.
Every time I see a trailer for that, it creeps me out.
Well, actually, that's. Believe it or not, that's actually supposed to be faithful to the manga, because in the manga, they point out that Alita's eyes are freakishly large, even by their standards, so...
Yeah.
Also, it's being directed by Robert Rodriguez, so...
Okay.
It's like, I'm sold! Alright, well, I do believe we got a show, folks.
Yep.
And what a show it was. So, if you by any chance want to write into the show, have something you want us to read on the air, have a question to ask, a comment, you can write into us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We've got it linked at the show notes. And our numbers have started picking up back again, so we kind of want to know why you guys like us so much, because God help me, I have no idea why. Right into us. So, also, on top of iTunes, you can catch our Unscripted Shenanigans at Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Archive.org, RSS, basically anywhere where unscripted lunacy that you can hear in your ear mouths and taste into your ear stomachs for your sound food can be consumed. That was a bunch of freaking word salad I just said. But anyway, I have been your host, Brandon Perkins, and for Filippo D'Onofrio, Patrick Mifflin, and Chris Logie, I would like to say good night, sleep tight, weddings can go to hell.